Hello, everyone. My name is Frank Napolitani. I'm the Chief Business Development and Marketing Officer at Sword & Kissel in New York. And today I'm joined by Danny Cohen, Head of Sales and Capital Introduction at Falcon X in San Francisco. Danny, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
My pleasure. So today we're going to be discussing cryptocurrency trading, market fragmentation, and the institutional interest in the asset class, which is growing by the day. But before we get started, Danny, why don't you tell us about Falcon X and the services you guys provide?
Thanks, Frank. Falcon X is a three-year-old firm that started out as a best execution trading firm, and we provide liquidity to the markets. We sit on top of exchanges, OTC desks, and also cross our own flow. We service a few different types of persona: crypto native hedge funds, crossover hedge funds, family offices, retail aggregators, and venture funds, as well as all of the new entrants into this space, some of your traditional banks and financial intermediaries and large RIAs.
Great. So Danny, why don't we just dive right in? You and I have both been in the alternative investment space for 20 plus years. I think we're dating ourselves a little bit here. Given your experience, plus the what's gone on with crypto over the last 5 years, and just to use a baseball analogy, what inning would you say we're in as it relates to the institutional capital flows into cryptocurrency?
Yes, a great question. We're early days. So I'll break it up into two buckets. You have a lot of venture money that's been going into the space, into both blockchain and into what you'll hear in the DeFi, decentralized finance. I think there's $60 or $70 billion of venture money in DeFi, which blew my mind. And of course, there are many headlines that Andreessen's raised $3 billion. So that will continue to flow and create a real floor to all the innovation. But as far as hedge funds and venture and sort of beta and alpha products in the space, I think we're in the second inning here. Of course, there's a tie-in of where Bitcoin and Ethereum are in the market, but we're really at a crossroads here where I've been talking to a lot of institutions, and there's part of them is fear of missing out. Clients might leave to go to another shop that's offering them the ability to trade in their IRA or their 401k, offering a beta product. But there are a lot of smart people that are looking at alpha right now. So I expect, irrespective of prices in the space, more money to be flowing in.
Understood. So last December, and this is while you were at your prior firm, you hosted a capital introduction event focused on crypto hedge funds. You had 131 institutional investors attend, which is great. So given the interest from institutional investors, do you estimate that the large, more traditional hedge funds will launch, more dedicated crypto strategies, or do you expect more of a continuing stream of the new entrants into the marketplace that might not have a traditional background in investments?
So on the fundamental side, in digital assets and crypto, we'll see more native people that really understand the theoretical underpinnings of a project and a token and can assess what that value might be. On the ARB side, we'll see more traditional folks come in. That's sort of the first wave where we'll see either market makers in the space, some of the old school folks from Chicago, which is a pretty big hotbed. And then, there's still a cross-border, the old ADR, ordinary arbitrage, that we saw the Jane Streets of the world doing the mid to late 90s. Because there are 200 crypto exchanges, which is a stunning number. Of course, not you don't want to be trading with all of them. There is a cross-exchange ARB component that has room to grow. Those folks are delta neutral and in theory taking zero market risk are making a lot of money on a monthly basis, which gets investors a true uncorrelated return. So I see the traditional guys going into the ARB space and sort of crypto native, again, being more fundamental, long leaning.
Understood. Listen, when you think about the institutional interest from both the fund managers and also the LPs that invest in those funds, what's the biggest driver of this interest, would you say?
Well, absolute return. The ball does not lie. And we always said there's a search for alpha here. And as a fiduciary, people have to assess everything in the world. And so that's number one. It's always going to be returns and then understanding. You and I both lived in making sure everything is solid below the investment line. The more reps investors are getting, more comfortable they are. Folks like Alborn are getting into the market and doing complete ODD. So that's getting the larger platforms ready. You know, part of it is also FOMO. You know, there's a lot of innovation happening and people just don't want to be behind the eight ball here. And so my tactical experience here is that there are a lot of large banks and financial institutions that have working groups put together and are getting ready to act both on the custody and wallet side, investment side, really all over the board. So there are tremendous conversations happening, which will lead to this sort of finance 2.0 in my mind.
Understood. So in thinking about some of the, you know, more arbitrage, we'll get into that. So, you know, accessing financing for long, shorts, and derivatives obviously is key to executing these arbitrage strategies. How does Falcon X, you know, enable these funds to execute those strategies?
Yeah, so there are a couple different types of trades, but ultimately at Falcon X, we are able to extend extended settlement credit for higher frequency traders or traders that are trading in coins that their custodian does not support yet. And that usually takes adoption of a new coin, can take 3 to 7 days, or maybe even 2 weeks, depending on who you are as the client. And so that's been a really good tool for our clients, although that's not always 100% repeatable. You know, the other part is that we've been very constructive with helping hedge funds structure one-off trades, right? So if they want to short a token, how do we do it? Do we construct it in the spot market? Do we construct it as a swap? So we are able to do that, which is a little different than you would see in the traditional world. And, you know, Frank, at some point, as we zoom out here, Falcon X will have a custody and wallet solution. We're in the process of putting that together, more to come, but that will obviously give you the entire gamut of solutions. The idea here is that we want to have a conversation, understand what the trade is, and see how we can help folks, and specifically on the short side. That's a big deal.
Understood. So why don't we switch gears a little bit to technology here? So, you know, a traditional EMS or an OMS platform will, you know, allow traders to look at equities through, you know, a level 2 lens for price discovery, bid-ask spreads, charting and whatnot. So do you use similar analytics, maybe through a third-party service provider, or do you have something on the Falcon X side that you're looking to roll out or have in development now?
Yeah, we're going to roll out our own order book sooner than later. And we have, you know, over 50 liquidity providers. Part of my job and my team's job is to add more interesting off-the-run liquidity providers so we can have our own order book. So, yeah.
Interesting. So obviously front-end trading technology is clearly important. So let's talk about the back end of this. So how are firms, you know, tracking their transaction cost analysis or TCA as it relates to best execution?
Yeah, it's something that we have built a report that folks can look at. It's not an instantaneous thing. It really services a lot of the larger banks and institutions that are regulated, where we're performing crypto as a service. So we are the white labeled liquidity provider for their clients. Sometimes the end clients are fintechs, some are retail, and some are institutional. And so we're not going to be micromanaged on this, but we have to have the ability to prove and show at any point in time, not just waiting for some regulatory body to come in. The idea here is to be able to do that at the time of trade, right, or right after, for all of our institutional clients.
Understood. So why don't we switch gears a little bit and talk about capital introduction services that you anticipate providing to your clients? Obviously, I know you've got a great deal of knowledge across the LP space and what LPs are looking for within the crypto space. What sort of events, given we're coming out of the pandemic now, what sort of events, whether in person or virtual, are you looking to do over the remaining 6 months of this year and possibly into 22?
Yeah, so a couple comments on that. We're in a place now, everyone in the digital asset space, to provide a lot of color to the investor community globally. I'm focused initially on North America because that's where I grew up. And this goes back to what CapIntro was in the mid 90s when it was born within traditional prime brokerage services. The difference right now is that there's such a hunger for learning and a yearn for assets, asset classes across the spectrum. So right now, we're getting calls about who's open on the venture side. We don't really know anyone besides A16Z and Ribbit. They're doing all the deals. Who's an up-and-comer in Fund 2 that's raising 75? Oh, and do they have a crossover fund? So what I've learned is that every manager, irrespective of strategy and asset class in digital asset space, is willing to spend time to teach folks. Could be you, could be I, institutional investors. That's a patience that's there. They understand the long game. So our rollout in terms of events will be a blend of venture, PE, and liquid of all strategies. I feel blessed that we can actually do that. We're fully up and running in the next 15 days with a team of six in North America. And so the idea is that I think one of the best things that happened to CapIntro is that we were able to go virtually. And that allows you to be inclusive with every investor. And so you can have someone in Alaska and Hawaii, Seattle, and overseas create replays and have folks access it. So I think the idea would be to have between 4 and 6 virtual events and then tactically have them have other in-person events like around big conferences. Mostly in the U.S., just because we know the investor base there.
Yep, understood. That's great to hear. So staff of 6 CapIntro folks already.
Yep.
That's great. Great to hear. All right, so why don't we switch gears a little bit again? So, digital custody. I know that, that has been an issue in the past, both for institutional investors and also for the accounting community in terms of interpretation of the custody rule. So how has the digital custody industry evolved over recent years to quell some of those concerns?
Sure, my favorite topic. Yes. Okay. Yeah, the 40 Act, the 40 Act has the custody rule embedded in it. And, the investment advisors that are registered, they're managing more than 150 million, have to use a qualified custodian. 3 or 4 years ago, I don't know what the status was, but there are a decent amount of qualified custodians right now and a lot in the queue, right? Because to get your BIT license in New York, it's just a staff mismatch issue. So there's a conga line at the door and folks that don't have their BIT license are getting their SOC compliance set up and everyone's getting ready. And the other thing is that the trust companies that are also state regulated meet the standard. So the OCC blessing is also very big. And they've only done that, I think, 3 or 4 times. So any other custody solutions are probably not going to be a destination for people who are large or want to be large. And that's what we've seen. People are summarily dismissing folks that aren't a qualified custodian. It just doesn't make sense, especially tying back to CapIntro. If we're going outside the band of friends and family, how do we indicate to the investor that we are going to be institutional? We might not be able to afford it right now, but what's the plan? Right. And without knowing or showing that you're going to be with a qualified custodian, it really doesn't bring confidence to an investor that they should spend their time in a very new asset class. And no one wants to lose their job. So this is a very important building block.
I would think it would be very difficult to get through the ODD process that many of these institutional investors whether they have an internal or they outsource that to a provider to come in and diligence these underlying managers if they don't have a qualified custodian. So right. That's a very high high hurdle to have to get over. Staying with the digital custody side for a second, you know, can you talk about the large banks and some even mid-tier investment banks that are getting into that space?
Yeah, they've been really interesting conversations. I don't believe there's a bank on the planet right now that's not having this discussion.
Right.
And I'm talking about sleepy custodians to the five largest banks on the globe. And so tactically, look, it's a land grab. There are large spreads in this business. The world, if you believe in tokenized assets and you zoom out and you think that anything that's tradable on the planet can be tokenized and fractionalized and traded 24/7, that will run on blockchain. And so if you're not setting yourself up now to understand the landscape and partner with people, whether it be white labeled or flat out buy them, you're probably not going to be in business, in a few years, in 3, 5, 10 years. And so I've been very impressed by the speed at which some of these banks are working and the way that they've hired folks that are crypto native, and some folks that are out there in the news are very very advanced, and they will be first movers, right? Whether it be mid-tier banks or large banks. So yeah, it's very encouraging to see that.
That's great. Well, Danny, thanks so much for joining me today.
I appreciate it, man. I'll do this anytime with you. Your pleasure.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much. And thank you for everyone else for attending as well. And please be on the lookout for our next conversation series at Sorting Kism. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Frank.